Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Demimonde Paranormal Podcast. In tonight's episode, we will be exploring the most haunted spots, or some of the most haunted spots, of the City of Brotherly Love, aka Philadelphia. So join me, won't you, as we dive in deep into the dark, mysterious underbelly of Philadelphia. If you don't know already, I'm Tori from Demimonde Paranormal, and each and every Friday, Demimonde Paranormal releases an all-new episode full of spooky and scary paranormal and supernatural themes. Also, we have a private paranormal group on Facebook.com by the same name that you see here, Demimonde Paranormal. If you would like to join us, you're more than welcome to. Just answer one question, and it's a simple question, asking for you to just be kind to everybody and respect everybody's opinion. If you can do that, we will be glad to allow you into our little paranormal family. So without any further ado, let's get started into tonight's episode, Haunted Philadelphia. Hello and welcome to Demimonde Paranormal, episode number 9. In tonight's episode, we will be talking about the most haunted spots, or some of the most haunted spots, in Philadelphia, in America. Our first location isn't exactly haunted, but it is spooky, eerie, but it also has some great informative literature and wax figures and specimens. If you guys haven't figured it out what I'm talking about the Mutter Museum. Mutter Museum was founded in 1858, and it has a spiraling, staggering 200,000 collection of anatomical specimens, wax figures, and pathological specimens, as well as antique medical equipment on display. It's located in the heart of the city of Philadelphia, PA, and it began as a donation project by a surgeon by the name of Dr. Thomas Dent Mutter in 1858. Dr. Mutter wanted to improve and reform medical education, so he accepted over 1,000 medical objects, that is 1,700 objects to be exact, and a sum of $30,000. Dr. Mutter also stipulated that the college, and by the college I mean the proper name of the Mutter Museum, is the Mutter Museum of the College of Physicians of California. So that's what I'm referring to when I say the college. Dr. Mutter stipulated that the college should expand the collection and hold annual lectures. They should also hire a curator, and they should also erect a fireproof building to house the collection in. The first building to house the museum was built in and completed in 1863. It was located on Locust and 13th Street, but the College of Physicians was built in 1909, and so the museum was then relocated to the college's current home on 19th South and 22nd Street. However, if seeing wet and dry specimens such as skeletal remains or even brains and organs isn't exactly your bag, you could also visit the Benjamin Rusk Medicinal Plant Garden. Benjamin Rush was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He was also a civic leader and a Philadelphia doctor who helped fund the College of Physicians of Philadelphia in 1787. He would encourage his fellow colleagues to keep a medicinal garden as a natural in a cooperative way to replenish their medicine cabinets in their chests. With the college's 150th anniversary, they finally took Benjamin Rush's advice in 1937, and they established the Benjamin Rush Medicinal Plant Garden that is just adjacent to the Mutter Museum. The garden is home to over 60 plants and herbs that hold historical and medicinal value. There is photography allowed in the garden, but photography is not allowed in any of the other galleries that the museum has to offer. Now, I do have to warn y'all, this museum, the Mutter Museum, is not for the squeamish. There are amputated limbs suspended in liquid, and there are horrible, terrible, stomach-turning deformities on display that real people have gone through, as well as cadavers and unborn children. You have been warned. View at your discretion. And we're on to our next location for tonight's episode. Our second location is actually haunted. You may have heard of this mansion. This is the Bale Roy Mansion in Chestnut Hill, Philadelphia. Now, Chestnut Hill is known to be very historical and affluent, but located in the town lies a house with an infestation of ghosts, demons, angels, and even djinn. The Bellroy Mansion is a 32-room estate that earned the name of the most haunted house in America. Many books have been written about the house in many paranormal shows, and investigation teams have visited this astounding mansion. It was originally built in 1911 by a well-off carpenter who is said to have murdered his wife in the home. Then, in 1925, a family by the name of Espy purchased the home. Only 1 year into living in the home, two of the children, two boys, George and Stephen, were playing in the garden of the estate, and while staring into the pond on the property, Stephen, the youngest of the two boys, saw his reflection in the water turn into a skull. George noticed this strange and frightening occurrence as well. However, George's reflection remained the same, and the two boys shrugged off the whole incident. However, tragically, just 6 years later, Stephen passed away from an undetermined childhood illness. Paranormal events continued to happen inside the home while the family lived there. George remained in the home well after his mother and father's death, while he was well into his 30s. Housekeepers were hired to keep up with the house and George, but George technically lived alone in the mansion until his death on the 11th of December in 2005, at the age of 87. It was actually George Espy himself who had the first paranormal experience inside the house. Even a portrait of himself had fallen off the wall and landed 15 feet from where the picture was originally hanging. The hook and wire were still intact, so it was as if someone had actually thrown the portrait itself. But who? The next supernatural phenomenon that took place was when he saw the apparition of his dead baby brother, Stephen, in the house. George said that his brother appeared at the foot of his bed while he was still a child. Even employees had met the spirit of little Stephen over the years of working there. Stephen's apparition was that of a little blonde boy, in which two co-workers had witnessed him standing at the windowsill of the house, looking down at them in the yard below him. One of the employees did not return to work after seeing the child's ghost slowly vanish into thin air. Another ghost inhabiting the home is Stephen and George's mother, Henrietta. Her spirit is known to be reserved and proper. But even she herself had made contact with paranormal investigators a few times. There's also the strange ghost of an old lady who likes to whack people with her cane, who is also thought to reside in the home, along with the original owner of Bellroy Mansion, and even the ghost of Thomas Jefferson. Now you may wonder to yourself, why is the ghost of Thomas Jefferson in the Bellroy Mansion? Well, apparently, George had collected personal items that belonged to Thomas Jefferson, and that attracted Thomas Jefferson's spirit. And it wasn't that Thomas Jefferson had ever visited the home, nor did he ever live in it. Also, while in the mansion, people have reported seeing shadow people, and they have also heard phantom footsteps and knocking. Ghostly cars have been seen driving up and down the driveway, and when one would go out to investigate the phantom vehicle, the car will completely disappear. Even a minister was attacked by a phantom with an antique pot that was thrown at his head with impeccable force. The electricity will cut on and off with no logical explanation as well. George S.B. actually made peace with all the spirits in his home and invited them all to stay there as long as they liked. On the second floor, in the 18th century drawing room, known as the Blue Room, sits a blue chair. It's 200 and some years old, and it has earned the nickname the Chair of Death. Why? You'll soon find out, especially if you sit on it. At first glance, the chair is quite lovely, proper, and sophisticated looking, as it is a light blue with a floral pattern, but it's hiding much darker shades. It's thought to have been originally owned by Napoleon, and it was made by an 18th century warlock. Anyone who sits in the chair will shortly die after. Four people were recorded to have passed away after sitting in the chair, and even George S.B. himself banned anyone from sitting in it. It's also said that a woman by the name of Amelia appears to anyone in the chair in a red mist. It's thought that Amelia was someone who owned the chair in her lifetime. The red mist envelops the person using the chair. Her spirit, Amelia's spirit, is thought to suck the life out of the person, causing an untimely death just a few days later. The only malevolent spirit, apparently, that lives in Bellroy Mansion is Amelia. George S.B. referred to her as a loose cannon and warned others to try not to fall into any of her spells. Her ghost is thought to rip open doors and frighten anybody that's inside a room. Amelia also loves to lure people into the Blue Room to try to make them sit in her chair. Amelia stalks her living victims. She breaks them down in order to take them to the spirit world along with her. A family friend of the Espies, a man by the name of Paul Kimmins, who even worked in the mansion for several years, had never ever experienced anything supernatural until this one incident. That is, until she met the ghost of Amelia. While he was escorting a medium through the house during a tour, she exclaimed, "My God, I can't believe how many ghosts are in this house." Paul was quiet, the skeptic, and he thought nothing of it. He continued the tour, but then on the stairway, he saw two a heavy blue mist. After the tour had ended, the medium, a lady by the name of Judith Haynes, had received a phone call from Paul stating that he had seen the apparition of Amelia in the backseat of his car. That is when Amelia's ghost began to torment Paul. She would wake him in the middle of the night by floating above him and squeezing his arms. She would appear at random times of the day and the night. Paul became sick and a former shell of himself. He was found in the blue room where he was working. He was found slumped over in the chair. He died just a few days later. So, we're on to our third location. This is a very famous prison by the name of Eastern State Penitentiary, located on 2027 Fairmount Avenue in Philadelphia, PA. This infamous prison sits in its castle-like structure in the heart of Fairmount, Philadelphia. It is known as the most notorious prisons in America, and now it's even known as the most haunted prisons in America. Construction began in 1821 and it ended in 1829. People from around the world traveled to Philadelphia to marvel at the grand architecture and the radical philosophy the prison preached inside its walls. The Eastern State Penitentiary closed down its doors in 1971, and it has since then become a national historic landmark. Once it was built, the prison was the most expensive building that was constructed at the time for a prison. A powerful group of Philadelphians opened the doors of Eastern State Penitentiary in hopes of reforming the conditions of prisons and the mindsets of prisoners. It was Benjamin Franklin himself and a few others who decided that they would create a prison system that was centered around reformity and enlightenment instead of punishment and misery. They believed that the prisoners should have looked to God to help them understand their crimes and give them guidance. The prison took 7 years to build. The architect was an Englishman by the name of John Haviland, who was inspired by the architecture of insane asylums and prisons in the 1780s in England. The initial capacity of inmates was 250, and they would each have an 8x12-foot cell that included central heating, a flush toilet, their own shower, running water, a private exercise lawn, and a skylight. Sounds pretty good, right? Wrong. From the minute the prisoners arrived at the prison, they were kept in complete isolation. There was an eyeless hood that was placed over their heads. The isolation would continue as the prisoners were left to contemplate their crimes and read the Bible. To continue reformation and repentance, all prisoners were not allowed to speak nor see their family members or their friends. They were not allowed to mingle with other inmates, and they also had to keep masks over their faces to hide their identity while they were out exercising in their private exercise lawns, only for 1 hour a day. Their only interactions with other human beings were with guards, or the prison warden, or overseers, and this was very, very little interaction and communication. The warden was supposed to see the prisoners once a day. The warden would only speak to the prisoners once a day through a small portal, and this small portal was where work materials and meals were handed to inmates. The inmates made shoes and they were also made to weave in their cells as well. In the year 1831, more prisoners arrived at Eastern State Penitentiary, and a second floor was added to each wing of the prison. However, that same year, the first female inmate arrived. So we're gonna flash forward a little bit. By the 1870s, the prison needed more space, and four more new blocks were added in between the existing wings in 1877. By then, all private exercise lawns were eliminated, and the inmates exercised together, still in silence and still with a mask over their faces. Even though the Pennsylvania system called for no corporal punishment, guards and counselors created their own forms of torture devices. This is, after all, prison, and if an inmate did something wrong, they were punished for it. Inmates were subjected to waterboarding outside in winter months until ice had formed on their skin. Some prisoners were even strapped to what is called a mad chair, where the inmate was bound so tightly that they lost circulation to their limbs, and this would last for up to a few days. There is also something called the hole, which was a cell under block 14. This is where inmates were thrown into isolation in darkness. They were locked in there for weeks. They would only be fed bread and water to eat. Another torture device was used on the prisoners was called the iron gag. Now what that was it had the prisoner tied their hands behind their back, and an iron chain was trapped to an iron collar in their mouths, and this iron collar would cause the tongue to tear and bleed. Now, on to the ghosts of the Eastern State Penitentiary. The Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures ventured into the prison and experienced disembodied voices and shadow people, along with unexplainable occurrences. Even notorious criminals such as Al Capone and bank robber Willie Sutton spent time in the penitentiary. Guests and staff have both heard ghostly giggling and weeping throughout the prison. Several thousands of people who visit the prison emerge with their own ghost stories and photographs with a spirit present in it. Guests have also claimed that they have seen a figure of a man at the top of one of the guard towers. Now, this is impossible because there is no actual way to access the top of the tower because the stairway had crumbled away such a long time ago. There is also the apparition of a woman wearing a white gown, and she has been dubbed the Soap Lady. She is usually seen in the last cell on the second floor. The second floor was the women's cell block when the prison was still in operation. So how about that, y'all? Man, that is a lot to take in, but could you imagine being locked in isolation in darkness for up to a week? Man, it had to be awful. If I was them, I'd never commit a crime ever again if I survived the Eastern State Penitentiary. Our next location is the USS Olympia, the warship. Approved in 1895, the USS Olympia was ready to release the dogs of war, and in 1898 it did just that, with guns ablazing in the Battle of Manila Bay. Years later, it served again in World War I with its guns ablazing. It was decommissioned in 1922. However, this was the ship that brought back an unknown soldier back home from France. Also, other ghosts and spirits have been detected throughout the ship. It's no wonder why the USS Olympia has been through hell and back. So it's bound to bring back a few entities along with it. Our next location is the Betsy Ross House. You may know her as the lady who made the American flag. She sewed it. She designed it. So this is the story of how her house is haunted. The Betsy Ross house has been seen and heard bellowing in the basement of the home. However, there is another spirit residing in the house, a more malevolent one. This ghost is so frightening that one of the house's staff members actually climbed out of a window and onto a flagpole just to get away from whatever or whoever was scaring her. The ghost of Betsy is said to be crying at the foot of the bed in the basement. Betsy not only lost her husband while she was living in the house, but she also lost her daughter while she was married to her third husband. It's thought that she is crying for her dead daughter and husband. He was killed while at war in an explosion. There is the possible explanation of a less mournful ghost, a more frightening and nasty spirit. Who or what resides in the house with Betsy? A more recent murder story came up explaining the more nasty ghosts that some people have experienced. In 1980, it's said that two security guards of the historic room got into an altercation in the basement of the gift shop. When the fight turned really sour, one of the men pulled out a gun and shot the other man 3 times. He left the other man to die there overnight. But however, ever since then, visitors have stated that they have heard disembodied voices from the area. In the parlor room, where Betsy herself met with the U.S. Flag Committee, visitors have claimed they could feel a dark presence, a very dark presence, while standing in that room. Both the staff and visitors have reported hearing rustling noises and disembodied voices coming from the basement. In the director's office, which is in the attic, the former director of the home felt a large hand grab her shoulder roughly. She was so frightened that she climbed out of the window and onto a flagpole. She was too terrified to walk across the room and escape down using the stairs. It's said that the former owner of the house died in that room, in the director's office. The house is over 250 years old, and Betsy Ross lived in it from 1776 to 1779. For more than 150 years, the home served as both a house and a place of business for a few former owners. At a time, it served as a tavern, a cigar shop, a tailor, a shoemaker, and a drugstore. And our next location is the Philadelphia Zoo. The Philadelphia Zoo is said to be built atop an ancient Native American burial ground. The zoo is a madhouse for poltergeist activity. So much poltergeist activity had been going on that the paranormal investigative team, Ghost Hunters, even paid a visit there. Our seventh location for tonight's episode is the City Tavern, the very sitting tavern in Philadelphia where the founding fathers would have gone to grab a bite to eat or have an occasional beer, is even said to be haunted by a ghost of a bride and her friends. The bride and her party were tragically killed in a fire in 1834. And now it's said that you can hear the sounds of clinking silverware and even moving tables that move on their own. There is also the apparition of a ghost in a wedding dress, which can be seen. And we're on to our next location. This is Washington Square. And remember how I talked about the Philadelphia Zoo being built atop a Native American burial ground? Well, Washington Square isn't too much different. Now, Washington Square was actually built atop a graveyard. In the 1700s, the area was a potter's field. A potter's field was a huge mass mass grave site that was used to bury African Americans, suicide victims, prisoners of war, and victims of contagious disease such as smallpox or yellow fever. According to a note from John Adams, even more than 2,000 soldiers called this ground their final resting place. The reason why Washington Square was built was because it was used as a way to prevent body snatchers from entering the area and taking what they could find. However, instead of moving the bodies, the city decided to leave them in the ground, and they planted trees and paved way for footpaths. So naturally, you can guess what happened. There is a tremendous amount of disrespect to the dead, and there is one special ghost that wanders the grounds. Her name is Leah, and she is dedicated to keeping the area safe. I have about two more haunted spots in Philadelphia that I'm going to tell you guys about. And the second to last one is the Academy of Music in Rittenhouse Square. Now, according to the legend, if you sit in the Academy of Music and you're sitting at the top row of seats, you can expect phantom pinching and hair pulling. Also, if you look over to the seat next to you that seemingly is empty, you may even see ghostly wrinkles in the chair's fabric, as if somebody is sitting there when there is nobody there. And our last location, the 10th location, is the General Wayne Inn. This Marion building was once investigated by Unsolved Mysteries. Its creepy history began as far back as 1704 and it stretches all the way to 1996. However, in 1996, a co-owner of the house killed his business partner in the office, and then the murderer's girlfriend and employee committed suicide in the same room. Today, the house is maintained as a synagogue, but attempts have been made to restore the house as an inn and restaurant. The ghosts of Hessian soldiers and even the spirit of famed American poet Edgar Allan Poe, who frequently visited the house in his life, is said to haunt the General Wayne Inn. Alright, that's all for the haunted spots of Philadelphia. I hope you guys enjoyed that, and I will see you guys in the outro. And I want to thank you guys so much for joining me for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Anyway, if you guys don't know, I'm Tori from Demimond Paranormal on Facebook as well as Anchor. And we drop new episodes each and every Friday on all things paranormal and supernatural. I hope you guys like this episode enough to return next week for an all-new episode. And if you haven't already, feel free to check out our entire catalog available on your podcast streaming services. We've done everything from haunted countries such as haunted Greece, where we took a look at haunted spots from all over that country, or we went to Sweden, Egypt, Italy, Germany, all those places. We've even went to haunted states such as New York. We did haunted Pittsburgh, and we did haunted Philadelphia, so I hope you guys enjoy that. So without any further ado, I wish you guys a good night, or a good morning, or a good afternoon. Stay safe, make good choices, be kind to one another, and I'll see you next week for an all-new Demimond Paranormal Podcast. Alright. This is me saying good night, sweet dreams, and as always, stay spooky.